It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. You're with us here on the Ideas Network. Director Martin Scorsese's latest film, Killers of the Flower Moon, was released in theaters last month. The movie is based on the book of the same name by David Gran, which tells the true story of a string of murders of Osage people in the 1920s. Here's a clip from the movie featuring Leonardo DiCaprio as Ernest Burkhart and Lily Gladstone as Molly Kyle, an Osage woman who would later marry Burkhart.
He told me he was going with Matt Williams for a time.
You talk too much.
No, I don't talk too much. Just thinking who I got to beat in this horse race, that's all.
I didn't realize this was a race. I don't care for watching horses.
Well, I'm a different kind of horse. What was that?
Shomikasi. That's how you are.
I don't know what she said, but it must have been Indian for handsome devil.
The film has been met with mixed reviews. Some people praising its commitment to historical accuracy and inclusion of Osage perspectives. Others questioning whether a white filmmaker is the best person to tell this story. Our next guest says there should be more support for Indigenous people to tell their own stories in film and on TV. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Have you seen Killers of the Flower Moon? What did you think of it? Do you have thoughts on who should tell stories about Indigenous people in film, video, TV? Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Jason Aesnap is a Comanche and Muscogee writer and filmmaker based in Albuquerque, New Mexico. He's an award-winning Indigenous film critic, receiving top awards from the Indigenous Journalists Association in 2020 and 2022. Jason, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Hey, it's great to be here.
Jason, you have seen Killers of the Flower Moon. First of all, what was your take coming out of this this long movie?
It's long. It's very long. It's long. I love Scorsese, don't get me wrong. I love Scorsese. I love Mean Streets. I love Raging Bull. I love his, I just love him as a filmmaker. I think he was put in a position, and he probably put himself in the position as well, to where it's a hard position to be in. You're a non-Indigenous director trying to tell the story of the Osage people, in a very particular, delicate, story. And I think he did the best he could, but I think the story probably would have been served better by not only an Indigenous director, but an Indigenous screenwriter, maybe even Indigenous source material.
Remind us of what this story is about for people who haven't read the book or seen the movie.
Oh, it's the story of the Osage murders in the 20s, how white people discovered there was oil-rich lands, not white. Some white people discovered there was oil-rich lands and decided to take advantage of that. And then a lot of Osage people were murdered in the process for their head rights.
Now, you wrote a piece for Vox. You interviewed Osage citizens about their experience in the community while it was being filmed, working on the film. What kind of things did you hear from them?
I was a little, probably the takeaway for me that I didn't expect was just kind of how power, there was three women that I interviewed in that story, and they were still dealing with the ramifications of that, of the actual, the murders. And Osage, what I found was the Osage people really hadn't actually had a chance to kind of come to a consensus on how to discuss this amongst their own people. And so in the discussions I had with these three citizens, these three women, they were still feeling a lot of the pain of or they were processing it, of this story that had happened, in the 20s.
Now, with the film, as it tells this story, as Martin Scorsese tells the story, what, as you watched it, did you watch and say, okay, this might have been done differently and maybe done better by Indigenous filmmakers?
Yeah, I was sitting there in the theater with great anticipation, just like everyone else. But at the same time, I look, when I watch films, I kind of watch, I put several different hats on. Like there's like, obviously just thinking about just story itself without regard to like how an indigenous filmmaker would do this differently. And then I think about how an indigenous filmmaker would do this differently. And it's just kind of, I asked actually the Osage citizens that I interviewed how, if they could envision that. And it's just such a hard thing to envision because of the scope of this project was so huge, and the money, and like Native people don't get that kind of access, you know. It's kind of this kind of breakthrough that we've had with Reservation Dogs and these other shows like Dark Winds, and it's fairly recent. And so to be able to have access to something like that, the project that Scorsese did, it seems unfathomable, at least to the people I was interviewing. But I was definitely thinking how, not even necessarily an indigenous filmmaker, but an Osage filmmaker, how would they approach this story? You know, I still am curious what that might look like, you know?
It struck me reading your piece again in Vox, you and definitely the people you talk to, there's some ambivalence, glad that you know, this story was being told, that it was reaching a wider audience. But a sense, you wrote something to the effect of that the Osage people, as presented in the movie, were kind of plot points to tell us about the character development and the story progression of DiCaprio.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, the respect was paid in telling the story. And like I said, Scorsese definitely did his homework and re-centered the story on Osage people and, you know, incorporated as much as he could of, you know, of their story and who they were as people, and tried to center as much as he could on the Osage people. But in the end, he's not Osage, and he can only center them so much because he doesn't understand what this story is to those people. And the ending in particular, I thought, not to, you know, give spoilers away or anything, but I thought the ending kind of also centered the story on, you know, a white perspective, like, look, in the end, this is a story of a white person telling a story about Osage people. And I think that's what he's trying to say at the end. It kind of took me a while to kind of try to understand what he was talking about. But again, it kind of like reiterates the fact that this is not a story for Osage people, and it's not from really the Osage perspective or even an indigenous perspective.
Talking to Jason A. Snap, a filmmaker, indigenous film critic. Starting point, the movie Killers of the Flower Moon, but wider issues of how Native Americans, how indigenous people are represented in movies and TV, and why money doesn't go to indigenous people to make movies and TV in the first place. You could join in at 800-642-1234 with your thoughts or your questions. You mentioned a TV series that, if I'm reading you right, you think gets it a lot better. I want to give a listen to a clip from Reservation Dogs. Here it is.
Look at you. I'm grown up, got a job.
I don't even know what I'm doing, and I almost fell off the roof. It's like they don't even teach you anything. Just expect you to know.
That's the native way of teaching. We have this traditional pedagogy of just get out there and learn. I remember one time in the blizzard, I had to put up a teepee. I lost 7 children in that storm. And then come the springtime, marauders came and stole me and sold me off to slave traders. And I had to push a log around for years on end, and I became really buff and ended up in the gladiator pit.
I get it. You've had it harder than me.
Well, I wouldn't necessarily say I had it harder than you. But truth be told, I had it harder than you.
Wait, that sounded like the background of Conan the Barbarian there. But Jason, talk a little bit about Reservation Dogs.
Well, I mean, there's so many things going on just in that scene. You know, there's the contemporary portrayal. There's humor. There's, some lighthearted banter. There's not overly serious discussion. It's just telling, you know, it's from a perspective of indigenous people without all the romanticism, and it's non-filtered. It's coming from a indigenous showrunner, indigenous writers, indigenous actors, indigenous, you know, directors. Like that, that's authenticity to me. And you can tell it comes through in all of that. In the piece I wrote, it's like, it seems like when non-indigenous people, when they want to tell our stories, they're so focused on like tragedy. I don't know what it is about our trauma that they seem so, you know, attracted to and wanting to, you know, to tell that story like over and over again. And it's just like, you know, I understand that that's, you know, obviously the Osage story, that Osage story is very important, but there's like, but this is a common theme with non-Indigenous people. They seem very attracted to that stuff in particular, as opposed to, you know, who we are in the here and now, you know?
And you wrote back in 2021 in Esquire, I think, you were at least hoping that Reservation Dogs would kick off a new era of Indigenous storytelling. Do you see any signs that that's happening now?
Oh, I think that's still happening. I was thinking about this project that, you know, Killers of the Flower Moon, it started before the pandemic, and it's kind of a carryover from, you know, probably, you know, 2019, 2018. I think one of the people I interviewed said she'd been working on it 7 years, and I'm not, you know, it's, you know, it's a project that goes back a long ways. So, and I know that there's several, you know, things coming out that are, you know, there's a lot of things that are coming out, like, from people that were on Reservation Dogs that we haven't seen yet. And so, I think, yeah, I have, hopes for the future.
Talking to Jason Aisnap, Comanche and Muscogee writer, filmmaker, and film critic based in Albuquerque. We're talking about how Indigenous people are represented in film and TV when they make the movies and TV themselves as well. After Martin Scorsese's new movie, Killers of the Flower Moon, made a splash in theaters earlier this month, you can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you have favorite movies and TV shows that represent Indigenous people? Do you notice changes happening in the kinds of stories that are being told in popular releases? Are you a fan of Reservation Dogs? Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. We'll continue the conversation. Maybe hear from you coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. Right now we're picking up our conversation with Comanche and Muscogee writer, filmmaker, and critic Jason Aisnap about who gets to tell Native American history in movies and TV in particular. You could join in at 800-642-1234. Do you have any recommendations of Indigenous TV shows or movies you've enjoyed recently? Are you looking for recommendations from our guests? Do you have questions about what it's like for Indigenous filmmakers behind the scenes? Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Let's go to your calls now. Matega is with us in Milwaukee. Matega, hi.
Hi, how are you guys doing?
Good. What did you want to bring up?
Okay, so I'm Native American, and I'm a Little Traverse Odawa in Saginaw, Chippewa, and I saw the movie Killers of the Flower Moon, and although, you know, I'm not Osage, I was very proud of it, you know, still, even if it wasn't done by Indigenous makers, but, you know, I did appreciate them using the location and some Indigenous actors. But I did have a question, and I was wondering, so I think when Dances with Wolves came out, you know, how that was very mainstream, and they thought that that would be bring, you know, Indigenous people or Natives into the spotlight more to films, and then that idea kind of seemed to fade away. So I'm wondering, is it going to be like that with Killers of the Flower Moon, or is it, you know, are Indigenous going to have more of a standing in mainstream films?
Matega, thanks for the call. Jason, what do you think?
Oh, yeah, I think we have a stronger standing these days with people like Taika Waititi and Sterling Harjo, who are actively, like, you know, making projects. And they seem to have, like, you know, a big footprint now. Like, they've gotten some traction. I think that things are different now than they were back in, you know, what was that, 1990? I can't even remember when Dances with Wolves came out. But we have, like, people that are, you know, that are in place now that are, you know, Sterling's, you know, he's producing, I know he wrote Res Ball, I think it's coming out with Sydney Freeland, who's a Navajo director, and that's going to be coming out probably next year. And then there's the Echo, you know, Marvel series that's coming out. I mean, there are things that are coming out that are, we haven't seen yet. And I think that we're in a much better position as Indigenous people for our media than we were like 20 some odd years ago, I think.
Matega, thanks a lot for the call at 800-642-1234. Mike joins us now in Brookfield. Mike, hello.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I just kind of wanted to ask your guest, do you think there's an issue or a problem with, you know, taking issue with how a film or a story is being put together, especially in something that's a really very large collaborative project, where there's a non-Indigenous, in this case, person that's making the story, and saying that there's somehow something maybe special that an indigenous director or screenwriter might bring that a non-indigenous person making that same collaborative effort might bring. And then the other piece that I kind of thought of while I was waiting was, how does your guest perceive this story as solely an indigenous people's story when it's a story that's taking place in the panoply of what's going on as the American continent or the North American continent is being settled over, you know, a several hundred year period of time by millions of Europeans.
Mike, I gotcha. So to his first point, Jason, I think Mike making the case that, okay, even if it's a white film director, if it's a collaborative process, if different voices are involved, does that answer some of your concerns?
You know, it's rare that I've seen it done to my satisfaction, at least over the, you know, in recent memory. I will say that, like, Prey, which was produced by Comanche producer Gene Myers, and then it was written and directed by, I think it's Dan Trachtenberg. I forget. He's a, you know, non-Indigenous guy. I thought that was done very well. That actually, I thought that kind of, like, broke my own role as far as my own rule for, like, what I think an Indigenous film is, because to me, my own personal role is like it needs to be either an indigenous writer or director. But Jane figured out how to, you know, as a producer, create some sort of Comanche footprint on that film by actually having a dub in the Comanche language, which is the first film, as far as I know, like first feature length film done that way. And it was incredible to see it. I thought it was just, yeah, I was so. I thought that was a really cool film, cool sci-fi film.
And to Mike's, go ahead.
Yeah,
Jason.
What was the second question?
The second point was there are white perspectives on the story, Native perspectives on the story, and if I'm hearing you right, Jason, you'd like to see more opportunities for that Indigenous story to be so foregrounded in movies and TV.
Well, I think that really at the end of the day, this is an Osage story. This is, even though you could approach it as like a Western or like, you know. You know, look at it like a big wider lens. It, to me, it's an Osage film, and it's an Indigenous film. So, that's how I would answer that question. You could, one can look at it different ways, but to me, when I see Killers of the Flower Moon, this is an Osage movie.
Thanks for the call, Mike. Talking to Jason Aesnap, a filmmaker, Indigenous film critic as well. Still time for you to join in at 800-642-1234. In that recent piece in Vox you wrote, Jason, it seems like one big structural problem is Native filmmakers, directors, and writers aren't getting the money to do these kind of things. What kind of changes would you like to see to provide more opportunity for these stories to be told from an Indigenous perspective?
I think that probably is changing a little bit towards the better, but yeah, just funding, like more funding for to make projects bigger. You know, we have like Sterling is doing some cool projects. Like Reservation Dogs has been a big breakthrough for Indigenous media, cinema, television. A lot of those folks I've heard have gotten a lot of opportunities, who were on that project have gotten a lot of opportunities from that project that we probably haven't seen, you know, or you know, that'll come in the future. But yeah, it would just be, you know, it would be really cool to have like some actual big like Hollywood funding behind, you know, an actual Indigenous narrative that's written and directed by us. That would be great, you know, just to have that kind of actual funding rather than, you know, I apply for grants and stuff and I get small funding here and there. And I'm always appreciative to make, you know, my next, whatever project comes next. Like, but yeah, it would be nice to have more doors open for Indigenous writers and filmmakers to make our own stories. And I think we tell our own stories the best. I don't think we need a filter.
I want to drop a couple names that you've mentioned and things you've written about. Rutherford Falls, a short-lived show set in the eastern United States with some Native American perspective and participation. Your thoughts on Rutherford Falls?
Yeah, it was a cool project. I noticed that a lot of the people from Reservation Dogs and Rutherford Falls, they went back and forth and they worked on both projects. So it's always good to see you know, a project, a native project come to fruition and be seen by people, you know, on the screen. I'm always supportive of that, you know.
And there was an episode, I think, of Rutherford Falls that made fun of almost directly another show, Yellowstone, not made by an Indigenous creator, often portraying Indigenous people, though. Very, very popular show with spinoffs. Taylor Sheridan, the creator of these shows. Your thoughts on that and how it fits into the world of portrayal of Indigenous people on TV?
Yeah, Taylor Sheridan makes a lot of Westerns and a lot of Westerns about that include my own Comanche people. The Comanche tribe. You know, it's interesting. I mean, I think sometimes when I watch, you know, his work, I feel like I feel that he's not connected to the stories that he's talking about. I'm thinking in particular of like, there's a boarding school storyline, and I forget what the name of the show is, 1923 or something. And it really was kind of difficult to watch because it's like, he's talking about something that he's not really a part of. And sometimes it comes off exploitive. It became kind of difficult for me to watch. And to me, I think an Indigenous writer or director would handle those stories with more nuance and care. And I would rather see that.
And just in our last half a minute, Jason, as a filmmaker, if you got the funding to make, you know, a decent sized Hollywood movie, what is a story you'd want to tell on screen? Just in our last half a minute.
I'd want to tell the story about my own, you know, Comanche people and my own great, great grandfather, Quanah Parker. And he was a very wild, interesting, person. And he was one of the last leaders of my tribe. And I know a lot of people have been trying to tell that story, but I would love to tell that story. I would love to get the funding to do something like that. And I have people, friends, collaborators that also want to help me tell that story. So that's the one.
Jason, thanks so much for joining us today.
Hey, thank you.
Jason Aznap is a Comanche and Muscogee writer, filmmaker, and award-winning film critic based in Albuquerque, New Mexico. He's with us today to talk about Indigenous representation on screen, why he believes Indigenous writers and directors should get more funding, more support to tell their own stories. I'm Rob Ferrett. This is Central Time here on the Ideas Network.